This is Notes from a Native Daughter, Voices from the Pan-American Experience, Raw and One-on-One. This is Notes from a Native Daughter. I am Soldanela. I sit here today with Sita Che, a violinist, composer, a musician, a poet. I want to also mention that she is part of Flor de Toloache, who won a 2017 Grammy Award for Best Album. And that's a great honor. And I'm so happy you came and you're here talking to me.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
It's such a pleasure to be here and an honor to be here.
Thank you. Or tell us, how did you start in this violin road? How did you pick up the violin and why?
Oh, wow. That's a good story. My parents saw one of their friend's daughter playing cello, and they thought it was a nice thing for daughters to learn classical instrument. I started with a lot of interest, not because of music, but because I had a dream of becoming a princess.
Aww.
And just like a lot of girls. And I realized around when I was 6 years old that I couldn't become a princess, or that's what I thought. And, oh, well, I wasn't born a princess. And then I saw the violinist on TV. And I was like, oh, that's the closest thing to a princess. So I kept telling my parents and everybody whenever they asked me what I want to become, I said violinist. But in my head, I'm saying equals princess. So that's how I started.
And what about the princess connected to the violin?
Well, violin itself is such a feminine-looking, elegant-looking instrument that shows a lot of crafts and refinement. And the sound is so delicate. It has a lot to do, very close to human voice, but also the high register kind of reminds you of that elegance of female. And also when you the way you hold it, the way you're presented as a soloist in a colorful dress, getting all the attention. So sometimes I'm embarrassed to say that it wasn't the music that inspired me.
But that's beautiful. And you kind of are a princess of the violin.
I don't know, but I feel very lucky that I was drawn to it in any way possible and kind of discovered during the journey that this is my passion. This is something that I truly connect to and that I feel like it is myself. So,
and when did you become like studious? Because you have to be
yeah.
be a violinist.
At one point, because I kept telling my parents that I wanted to become a violinist, they took me seriously. And they said, well, when I was in fifth grade, they told me, you have to audition for the best conservatory school if you are serious. And then they bought me this beautiful violin, the serious violin, and that opened my ears up because it spoke to me for the first time. That was such a sensation that I never forget. And then at that point, I came home running, like right after school every day, just to keep playing. And I still have that violin. And that was the first real musical encounter with the instrument. And I practiced a lot, and literally like wake up at 6 a.m. before I go to school. I practiced 2 hours and then come home, had like 3 lessons a week, which is a lot. And then I made it to the conservatory school. So I was, at that point, I was really happy, really proud. But when I was exposed to all these fellow passionate young musicians, and when I heard them play all this different repertoire, not just violin repertoire, but all these different musical repertoire, I started to really explore, and I just couldn't stop myself from listening to music and read different music, buying different music sheets and CDs. I actually broke my CD player from playing it too much.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that really kind of built me, built my taste and built me classically at that point.
But then you went into folk music at some point, right? Korean folk music.
Uh-huh.
So talk about that.
So throughout my classical trainings of competition and, you know, doing what a specific genre or specific style asks for, it's a lot about discipline and studying the history of it. And I got really fascinated by the way composers wrote it and what influenced them. And I noticed during college year that there is something so interesting about Bach's scale that makes you think maybe he traveled around Balkan area, because the scale is very exotic. And, you know, Mozart wrote about Turkish march, and Brahms wrote about Hungarian dances, that he was inspired by the gypsies. It's still in classical style, but you can imagine that they were influenced by the folk artists. Mm. And when I went back to Korea right after college, I regained appreciation towards my own folk art from my own country, because I thought, well, it's not necessarily because it was my route, but I just felt that it was a little unfortunate that people weren't appreciating it. And it was such a beauty that if you have something beautiful, it is your duty to share it with the world. And it's not to contain it just within yourself or treat it like it's a museum thing in a glass. So I felt compelled to learn. And I also saw a lot of similarities in languages of music in general. Like what we valued in classical music, they valued, which is about breathing together, feeling it together, and being true to the moment and bringing that out, reacting to the moment. So I ended up touring with them on Silk Road and in Europe, which was, you know, collaborating with a lot of folk artists from those countries. So it was a lot of exploration and experiments.
Do you think that music then helps you understand what it means to be in the present moment?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So much so that at one point I felt like a magician who is manipulating people. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying musicians manipulate people, but mm-hmm. I felt like I was manipulating people, and I felt I actually wasn't sure if it was a good thing or a bad thing, so I had to think about that. But if musicians have to be so true to the moment and so acutely aware of the energy that you can't just ignore the moment. So that's really one way of appreciating uniqueness of, you know, everyday life.
Do you feel safe in that moment, in those moments when you're playing?
No. Super vulnerable. And because you don't know how it's going to be. Oftentimes, you don't know who your audiences are. It's not just about, like, the location or the culture, but it's also the combination of the audience. It can be a combination of young person who is completely new to the theater, or someone who knows the repertoire so well that they are mouthing the whole thing. So all of those combination gives a certain energy back to the performer. And we feel it. I feel it. And then we're creating it together in the moment. And that's, you know, it can be really, really beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen moments like that. I've lived through very magical moments in watching live music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one time I had this experience not too long ago watching this bass player. This was a couple of years ago. And he was so raw. Mm. He was so in the moment. Uh-huh. He was so, like, powerful that I felt I went back to a time when I was a dancer, and it made me miss it. It made me recall my freedom as a dancer, as a performer. And it was so moving. It really changed, like, my life. I saw the moment at a moment where I was very vulnerable, and watching it and experiencing it sort of made me feel good. It was like, I'm in the right place. Mm-hmm. I made these choices where I'm at right now for the right reasons. And it was sort of a reminder, like a redeeming moment. Wow. Very, very beautiful because of music. And so I think I know what you mean. I remember that everybody else in the audience was like going wild, you know, watching him.
Oh, wow. I wish I was there.
Yeah, it was very cool. But I want to go back to folk music and Korean folk music. Talk about what is so beautiful about it for you. And maybe is there a beautiful legend in folk tales or something like that?
Yes. What drew me the most in the very beginning was the appreciation between notes. They appreciate the space, and they feel even the moments that there are, the notes are not happening, the music melody is not happening, and the weaves between notes and the energy that carries throughout the rest was one of the most moving thing for me and a new thing for me. And I felt like that's how it should be in music. We play a lot of things, a lot of different styles. There is a moment when you don't do anything, but it's still a continuation of what happened before and what happens after. And that has a lot to do with feeling the moment also. Mm-hmm. And also the vibration, the fact that they appreciate different styles of vibration, meaning they let you choose your own vibration and the velocity of whatever that you play that kind of defines your own style. At the time, I was doing classical music that has very specific trend of vibratos and vibrations, so I was fascinated by that. And they also let you explore different intonation tuning that allows a little more color that is outside of the well-tempered zone, which is in Western music, everything is divided in equal tone from one note to another is all same distance. But in a lot of folk music, especially, like I also see that in mariachi music that I play, some things are sharper to create that tension and create that raw sound that reminds you of the real nature that is really raw. And they preserve that in folk music. So I really felt that in Korean music and later on in many other folk music, and fell in love with that real organic love of accepting things as it is, as is. So that's what drew me to Korean folk music at first. I do have one beautiful story, not about Korean folk music really, it's about Mongolian folk music, but I fell in love with it completely. So we were touring on Silk Road and we performed with Mongolian artists. And it was such a beautiful experience because you could see the influences that they had together. You know, because everybody is influenced by their surroundings. And it was almost as if I was expanding my territory. It was almost as if Mongolia was a bigger Korea, bigger part of Korea. I am not saying that Korean people conquered or influenced them, but it's just the interaction, the traffic that you see through your neighbor's culture, mm-hmm. which was so beautiful. And they had this instrument that has similar sound to Korean violin or erhu, which is Chinese. Korean is called haegeum. Mm-hmm. And but it looks a little more like a box, and they have a horse-headed head, mm-hmm. Which is influenced by their horse riding culture. So there is a unique thing applied to what is already similar. The legend is that a llama or a camel had just given birth to a baby. And the llama was so tired that didn't care about the baby and didn't give the milk to the baby. And the baby was about to die out of starvation. The Mongolian people culturally and historically have shaman culture. So the person who had the llama called a shaman, and the musician who played this morinker, this instrument is called morinker, to play a song, and the shaman was singing. And the llama started crying and started feeding her baby. So the baby was saved. And it says a lot about, of course, the culture itself, but it's the story that's trying to portray the beauty of the sound of that instrument, which is, it sounds a little bit like the Korean violin, but it also kind of sounds like viola. It's a beautiful instrument. So I actually wrote a song or arranged a song inspired by that song. There's a song in Mongolia.
What is it called?
I called it Mongolian Morinker. But there's also a documentary about it. It's also very, very beautiful.
So talk about your neighbors now in the other side of the world.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you've had an extensive trajectory, but how do you find yourself playing in a mariachi band, a woman mariachi band at that,
mm-hmm.
and how do they connect?
It actually just started making sense to me very recently, but at first I started out of a friendship. My friend wanted to join, didn't want to join by herself. And she asked me if I wanted to join. I was like, sure. And I was immediately touched by the bonds of the girls in the band. It really made me appreciate myself as a female, because coming from a very specific, not very diverse culture of Korea, you have one image of femininity. I have lived here since high school, so I am aware of different kinds of femininity, but the way they strongly really embraced their own femininity, which one of our players is very funny, very boyish, everybody wants to be friend with her. She's like the most popular girl in our band. And then we have a girl who's completely embracing her sultry and her color in such a spicy way. That's how I want to put it. And she never gives it to people easily, but you know her love is there, and it takes time to get to know her. And once you know her, you're a really close friend. And then we have a friend who is very articulate verbally, and we have a friend who is just embracing everybody. She doesn't say anything aggressively. She's there, and she says it when the moment comes, but she waits, and she just lets everybody enjoy. And then we have another girl who's very, very sweet, and then we have a funky girl. And it is all there. It's all different, but they're not trying to be male-like. They are all very comfortable with their own sex, and it's so interesting to watch so many colors, such a strong spirit. But we, together as a one band, we represent femininity, and it's such an honor to be there. Now, going back to connecting all the dots, is I was just enjoying and learning so much about the culture, because all of those girls come from different backgrounds. We're not Mexican. Only one of them is partially Mexican, and everybody's from Colombia, Venezuela, Indiana, and partially Cuban and Korea, myself. So you're learning all these people's way of connecting to Mexican music. And they're bringing their own backgrounds. And because we have different way of portraying ourselves, just communication or just the way they say hi, when they bring up the important subject and how they do it, that itself connects all of our differences, just trying to be together. And I, for a very long time, I felt like I was coming from the farthest. But I started studying recently about Latin music's history, because it's I was actually deeply touched by the community. Actually, when I attended Latin Grammy, first I was like, these are all countries next to each other who could have hated each other, who could have competed against each other and say, well, I am bigger than you. And I'm sure that probably happened in a small way, but they decided to focus on what they had in common, and which was Spanish and all out of culture. And I think it also has to do with the sad part of the culture, right? The colonization. But they decided to utilize it to heal, to share, and to come together. And so much so that they have their own Grammy. And I felt included. It was in that way such an amazing experience. So that made me study the history and where it was coming from, why some of the Latin musics have Afro-Latin, you know, connected. Mm-hmm. And I'm still learning a lot, but that connected me to Africa and Europe. And the historical thing, which brought a lot of religious and, you know, the folk ritual and the spiritual concept, that through that I was able to immediately connect to what I had learned from Korean folk music, which also has a lot to do with shaman music. So it was the spirituality that I started to, you know, explore and connect.
You see, Pan-American.
Yeah.
You see?
Yes.
It's like all the, we're like, it is, it's one big continent, mm-hmm. with an influx, yeah. of people from all over the region and all over the world. Mm-hmm. And I find that expansive. Mm. I find it comforting.
Yeah.
I think that if more people did music or art, we connect ourselves more.
Yeah.
Right? Because art does help us communicate.
Right.
In the invisible language of the heart.
Yeah. I like that. It took me some time to digest what to think of it, really, because of the history and what had happened,
mm-hmm.
and made me appreciate the role of arts, because things happen, and our job as artists is to remind people in a beautiful way that we can heal, but at the same time not to repeat mistakes. And it's a beautiful way, beautiful form of doing it. And I think through that, you really start to appreciate the pure thing.
So when you were speaking at the Immigrants' Rights Coalition morning press conference, can you talk a little bit about what you said?
I am actually working on a project that is very similar to what I said, and I was on that mindset. I had this friend that I went to college with, and I saw entire process, and her name is Teresa Lee, and a lot of people don't know, but she, the reason why Dream Act started was because of her passion for music and her talent, and it moved the teacher so much that by the time she said, I don't want to go to college, because she didn't want to get deported or caught, it shocked the teacher. And the teacher was also an open-hearted person, a compassionate person, that she put into act, and she put together famous artists and senator to put a bill, a personal bill. And that was the Dream Act just for her. And I wanted to share that a lot of people think art's role in society is, it's like a leisurely act when you have everything, something that is far from necessity. But this was a really good example that this is a human core and human nature that moves people. And a lot of things that are happening right now has so much to do with lack of empathy. And I think sometimes I am embarrassed as an artist, because I think it's really kind of our job to remind them that we have the capability to connect with one another and remind ourselves what is universal, what is actually important, that makes us human. So I wanted to focus my creativity on showing what cultures have in common. It shows that we have this thing inside that wants to focus on a pure emotion, pure humanly thing, to turn that into something. Sometimes tangible, sometimes not. But the goal is to remind people of that side of us so that we don't become robot. And we, because I, as a musician, had the privilege to see so many common grounds in different cultures, spotlighting on where cultures meet cultures and how culture was not just created by itself, but influenced by the neighbor culture. There is always everything going around together, and we've been weaving each other's together. And you see that I was just in Amsterdam first time, and so many beautiful things. And you see in souvenir shop, interesting thing. It's like they decide to sell what they think it represents them. So I went there, and of course there were tulips, and there were cute bunnies, and there were these china. Anyone would easily spot that this is Chinese style of making china. I mean, that's where the word china came. But they were influenced by that during the trade, and then they turned that into their own thing that holds tulip in a very unique way. And I thought it was so beautiful. I wanted to get it. And I also saw the arts of Van Gogh, which, you know, represent them as their artist, who was heavily influenced by the Japanese art. And he recreated it in his own way. And seeing all of those things just really reminded me once again that we have been appreciating each other. We have been influencing each other and recreating, therefore connecting with each other for centuries. So,
and what about the violin, the physicality of it. You have to hold it, right, this way.
Yeah.
Do you, like, do, like, neck exercises? I mean, how does that affect you?
Oh.
Or doesn't?
It does. It affects me physically and mentally. It is not the most natural position of the body, and it really does require a lot of counter exercises. So sometimes, if I have time, I do ballet to even out, to balance. And like you said, you're supposed to stretch your neck in the opposite way. Ideally, you're supposed to stretch before playing and get all the blood circulation. It could cause injury in the long term. And just like any instrument.
Sure.
Yeah. So you try to relax. You try to physically connect to it in a relaxed position. But there are times when you're emotionally so charged, you want to give extra oomph. I just go ahead and tense myself up and give everything. And then I'm thinking I'm not, you know, doing a smart thing here in the long term. It's my dilemma. I think a lot of musicians have.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that because I danced for many, many years of my life, 26.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I'm very aware of the physicality of most things in relation to performing arts, you know, since we're talking about this, you know, actors in space, obviously dance. But I am fascinated by how musicians withstand performance because I am cognizant of the fact that it can be so strenuous, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen famous pianists, you know, with all of their fingers, like, Band-Aid and purple because of so much playing and practicing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
So I think of this when I see, when I'm watching a performer, you know, or the trombone, you know, I'm always like, God, what are they feeling, you know? Especially, you know, after a solo that has, you know, taken it out, you know, and, you know, coming off, you know, do you get dizzy? How do you recoup, you know? Because you always have to find a way to come back. And in a show, you have to go, go, go.
Mm-hmm.
So you're exhausted afterwards.
Yeah, it is pretty exhausting. I agree with that completely. By the end of the show, I have very little energy to party, which some of my colleagues have energy to party all night long. So it's a fascinating thing for me. But I have seen artists like Keith Jarrett struggles from back pain, but you could tell when he's engaged, everything is just, every part of his body is reacting to it, and you can't necessarily say, oh, that's wrong, because you know all of that body part is taking parts in creation. So it's and of course there has been techniques of relaxing your body and preparing your body and keeping your body from the injury. And I was actually thinking about the exact same thing when I was watching the figure skating. I could relate to them. I could relate the pain, the mental stress. Yeah. So
it's Olympian.
Yeah.
All these years. So how many years have you now been playing the violin?
I have to think how old I am first. 28 years.
28 years.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Do you feel strong?
I feel like I'm in the middle of fermentation. I feel like now I am seasoning. I'm in the middle of happening. Now I feel that I am more with my violin and my music than ever. And I still have a lot to go. So I feel like I'm in the middle of that journey. And there are times that I struggle with the instrument, that I feel distance with the instrument, and that, of course, requires a lot of practice. But sometimes that makes me think about, well, how am I still going to be who I am without the instrument if that day comes? So I do that. I do that mentally, and I want to be a musician, not dependent upon just one instrument. And I think that has a lot to do with just pure creation. It could be writing music, writing about music, or also taking parts in the audience and supporting your colleagues. I feel more than ever equally engaged just being in the moment, even if I'm not the one who's, you know, taking charge of it. I have 7 violins.
Okay, and how does that work?
I do so many different kinds of music. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty to the extreme. I do Latin music. I do free improv. I do classical music, Korean folk music, and Broadway music. So that's very different kinds of acoustical setting. And even within Broadway shows, I have to be sometimes mic'd or sometimes very quiet acoustically. I'm not saying that everybody needs 7 violins, but so I try to use a specific violin for that small setting. When I'm improvising, I enjoy playing on the 5-string violin, which has one note, one lower register that is same as a viola string. So I am exploring the lower side of the string instrument. You know, of course, there is a difference between older instrument and the newer instrument.
Of course.
So.
And they all have a little bit of you.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like I'm an old soul, but then I feel like a child oftentimes.
Do they call you? Like, do they know you're coming? Do you feel like they speak to you?
I would hope so. I will say that they know. It's very interesting. If I don't play it often enough, the quality of the sound, the violin shuts down. And we use that term professionally. We have to open it up. And I don't really know how it works, but depending on how you play, if I keep playing, which I did, I played so softly for this show specifically, I was doing that consecutively. This violin was a very loud instrument to begin with, but it became softer and softer and softer. And it happens. It's you know, we all know that. So we try to venture.
Well, musicians know that.
Yeah.
Not everybody knows that. Or, I don't think that they would outright think about it. But, you know, and I see, you know, especially a violin that requires, you know, it's so close to you.
Mm.
And it's so close to the jugular
that
I feel like it has that. You can't just leave it anywhere. You know what I'm saying?
That's
there has to be some magic connection there. So that makes sense what you're saying.
Yeah, there is also a legend about how it was created. It's a gypsy legend. It goes something like this. This person was, he lost his wife. And he sold his soul to a devil in return of a violin that had his wife's spirit. And that was the birth of the gypsy violin, I guess. But it indicates that it has that spirit of a person. So my current biggest project is Cosmopolis Collective. Yeah, and it means a citizen of everywhere, and it kind of weaves everything that I've done with all of these different world musics and classical music and jazz music, because I think we are all connected, and the musics are all connected, and arts are all connected. And I wanted to make a direct statement about that. Because I really believe that we are, as artists, have social duty and responsibility, I wanted to connect to people with that message. So we have a sitar player, we have a percussionist who's played with Tito Puente and all these Latin artists and also Asian artists, and he's been everywhere, so he's very fluent with all these languages. And I'm bringing my Korean cello and five-string violin, and we have a jazz guitarist and a bassist, and we have La Bruja. We had La Bruja rapping to one of our tunes. And I asked all the musicians who come from different backgrounds, different experiences, to bring a tune or two that weaves, that highlights on the mixes of culture. It doesn't have to be an actual historical mix, but it could be a conceptual mix that shows one thing about one culture, but another culture doing the parallel thing another time, or something that leads into it. So we put that together for the first time, and it itself was such a celebration of each other. And I was also inspired when I went to Amsterdam, because I went to Anne Frank's house. Mm-hmm. And I grew up reading her diary, and to see her, the place where she was hiding, and to read it again was, of course, striking experience. But I thought it was so powerful, the way she took it was not just sad or restrained or depressed. She, at the end of her diary, she was saying that she believed in good of people. Mm-hmm. She believed, despite everything that was happening to her, she believed that people are good in the core, and the world would be a good place soon. And that moved me so much, so that I wrote a tune about the sad histories, but something that turns into a celebration, because we will be celebrating together if we hold hands together and march together. Because if we hold hands together, we are so big, and we are marching together for something that is bigger and stronger. And it's not to throw down someone else. It's just a march of celebration. So that's our project is about that. And I love that part of life, because every moment is so unique. You just have to keep your heart open. Mm. And you react to it, and you regenerate something, and that turns into something else. And I think that's how a lot of things should be.
Thank you.
Just like this interview.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.